Love him or hate him, presidential candidate and consumer advocate Ralph Nader is a man who has stuck to his principles. Since the 1960s, he's been responsible for numerous federal consumer protection laws, including the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, and the Freedom of Information Act. He also helped create OSHA, the EPA, and the National Highway Transportation Safety Administration. Steve Paulson spoke with Ralph Nader about living a principled life.
You have been called a lot of things, hero, gadfly, spoiler, but you have never been called a sellout. So I'm wondering, when you look back at your life and your career, how important has it been to you not to sell out?
Well, when you're raised in that way, there's really no alternative. So unlike Oscar Wilde, who once said he can resist everything but temptation, I was raised to resist temptation. So my mother and father and three older siblings, all by their own example and by what they read and what they conversed, basically conveyed to me that there is no alternative other than to tell the truth, because the truth reflects reality and it avoids delusion. And if you reflect reality, you can convey how to improve reality. And that's what I applied to the auto safety movement in the 1960s, that selling out by so many people who knew how unsafe these autos were designed was because their livelihood was at stake. They were employed by General Motors or Chrysler or Ford or VW. Or if they were at universities, they might lose some grants or not be promoted. And so when I looked at the situation, I knew that it wasn't all due to the driver, that the highway and the motor vehicle had a very important connection in first reducing the likelihood of collisions and second reducing the likelihood of injuries or fatalities when the collision occurred. So you see, connecting with reality by not selling out allowed me to propose ways to make cars safer, which Congress adopted in the motor vehicle and highway safety laws of 1965 and 66, signed by President Lyndon Johnson. Mm-hmm.
But you live and work in a political world. You, of course, have been a presidential candidate. How have you survived a career in politics without compromise, without selling out? Because we always hear politics is the art of compromise.
When you don't sell out in politics and the public, namely the voters, don't do their homework about the actual record of different candidates and simply go for one of the two major parties and ignore a third party candidate, you don't get many votes. So you pay a price.
And you have paid that price?
Yes. Well, I didn't get many votes, even though majority of the people wanted me on the presidential debates and by number of polls. And certainly my agenda was a majoritarian agenda. If you polled it, most people want full Medicare for all with free choice of doctor and hospital. They want law enforcement to be tough on corporate crime, fraud, and abuse against consumers and workers and the environment, and on and on. But it didn't make any difference, because once the two-party system has, in effect, a joint dictatorship keeping other candidate choices from reaching the voters, it's very easy for them to proceed in that kind of tight environment and not tell so much the truth and still prevail.
But I guess the question is, would you be more effective, or would more of your agenda get on to the sort of the public, into the public conversation, if you were willing to compromise more?
Well, that word compromise has to be taken in the following way. I don't have to compromise, because let's say I'm up against General Motors or Exxon or Pfizer. They're so powerful on Capitol Hill, they force a compromise. So why should I help them do it? So it's really like a tug of war. And, you know, if you're on one end of the tug, you don't give the opponent a slack. The opponent is going to try to pull you. So in that sense, our proposals, which I have always thought understated the need, they're quite reasonable, were sandpapered down by the opposition in the House and Senate, for example, by the corporate lobbies.
So what you're saying is that, I mean, you've sort of held to, a certain degree of purity. I mean, you've said, okay, here's what we need to do. Here are my principles. And you just push as hard as you can on those. And you figure that, well, as these get taken into the political system, other people will compromise then?
they'll compromise my position, because when I support a safety goal, I feel that I'm the volunteer trustee for millions of people out there who need to have a safer workplace, cleaner air, cleaner water, safer food, and so forth. And it's not up to me to decide for them how weak I'm going to make what I believe to be a reasonable case. So we'll leave it up to the opposition and in the context of Capitol Hill.
Do you see yourself as representing the citizen?
Yeah, very much so. That's what a public citizen does. Going back to ancient Athens, when they had people going around the city, improving the city, and day after day, and they called them public citizens. And that's a trusteeship on behalf of people who are busy with other things.
Well, I want to take you back to the fall of 2008, right after Barack Obama was elected president, because you made a statement that got a lot of public attention, got you into a lot of hot water. You said, and I'm quoting here, "To put it very simply, Obama is our first African-American president, or he will be, and we wish him well, but his choice basically is whether he's going to be Uncle Sam for the people of this country or Uncle Tom for the giant corporations." That didn't go over very well for a lot of people who just voted for Obama. Of course, that was then, and this is now. And I guess I'm wondering how folks on the left are responding to your critique of Obama now.
Well, they're very critical of Obama, and a lot of them have said that I read him right, that he was basically very good rhetorically, but he signaled again and again by wanting to keep a large military budget, expand the war in Afghanistan, not go for full Medicare for all, and be rather concessionary to Wall Street and the prolonged bailouts that he inherited from George W. Bush, that he was really very much of a corporatist pragmatically, however he might have appeared on the stump rhetorically.
Are you saying Obama has sold out?
Well, he sold out almost in the dictionary sense, in the sense that, you know, about a third of the money he's raised, and he's raised about $150 million so far, a record at this time, on his way to a billion, from the financial industry, otherwise known as Wall Street. And it's pretty tough, you know, to pursue a people's agenda, which often comes into conflict with corporate priorities and demands and avariciousness, and have your hand out through your emissaries in posh Manhattan restaurants or in Beverly Hills, California, raising money from corporate interests.
Now, there's been a pretty interesting alliance that's popped up in just the last year or so. I know you have joined with a Tea Party favorite, Ron Paul, to form a kind of progressive libertarian alliance. Can you tell me about that?
Well, you see, the pure libertarians don't sell out either. You may disagree with them, but they don't have antenna calculating how this is going to affect sales or their promotion or the approbation of their peers. And Ron Paul is in that category. Now, I disagree with him very fundamentally in his position against all health and safety regulation, all Medicare, Medicaid. But on foreign and military policy, I think he's right on. I think his criticism of the Patriot Act and degrading our civil liberties is right on. I think his criticism of the sovereignty-shredding, job-exporting NAFTA and the World Trade Organization is right on. I think he does want strict law enforcement on corporate criminals and fraud. And I think he likes to keep the courts open for people who have grievances and not engage in restricting our tort law. And so the question is, well, why not, without having to compromise our respective positions, why not collaborate? And I think we're going to see an increasing convergence between libertarian and authentic conservatives and liberal and authentic progressives on more and more of these issues. Whether it can turn into a political force or a political party, that remains to be seen.
So how are progressives responding to your overtures to the Tea Party?
Well, when I talk about the agenda, they can't disagree because they're on the same side as Ron Paul. I mean, when Ron Paul says, what are we doing becoming an American empire with bases in over 100 countries, spending tens of billions of dollars on the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq, spreading into Yemen and Libya and elsewhere, without even a congressional declaration of law He's a strict constitutionalist. And a lot of progressives agree with that.
Suppose a truly progressive Democratic president were elected and appointed you to, let's say, a cabinet position, and you were in the position where you really could advance your agenda more, but you would have to compromise. You would have to sell out to some degree. Would that trade-off be worth it?
Well, first of all, compromise doesn't mean selling out. I mean, selling out usually means return of some material or honorific reward. As, let's say, as Attorney General, you have to compromise in terms of not going over the due process violation. You can't throw people in jail without charges, deny them access to lawyers, as has been happening, wiretap them without judicial approval, which is a serious felony under federal law. So you got to make sure that with the enormous authority that's in an attorney general, that you restrain yourself in that sense. So procedurally, you got to restrain yourself. Substantively, you are an advocate as an attorney general, and you can take the facts as far as they'll go with you.
Sounds like if the attorney general job were offered to you, you'd say, sure, I'll take it.
It has to be the right president, because you're the attorney general for the president, unfortunately, even though legally you're representing the people of the United States.
Presidential candidate and consumer advocate Ralph Nader. Steve Paulson spoke with him from his office in D.C.